It is Friday, November 16th, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. KUAF is supported by Soul Yoga Lounge, located on Dixon Street in front of Clubhouse Fitness in Fayetteville. Hot yoga is available to the community each Friday afternoon at 5:45. All skill levels are welcome. SoulYogaLounge.com for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Fayetteville will be one of many cities around the world hosting events designed to raise awareness about Syrians displaced by the continuing violence in that country. We'll talk to one of the organizers of Arkansas' Stand for the Children of Syria program, plus a new endowed chair for the University of Arkansas's Eleanor Mann School of Nursing, and a new Speaker of the House in Little Rock.
But first, state lawmakers are beginning their assessment of Governor Mike Beebe's proposed budget for the coming year. Arkansas Finance Director Richard Weiss presented the nearly $5 billion proposal to the Joint Budget Committee Thursday morning, telling reporters afterward,
"It's a very conservative budget. A 2% growth, a little over 2% growth, is under most scenarios, is a pretty conservative amount. So, I mean, again, it's a balanced budget, balanced to a very conservative forecast."
The proposal includes a cut in the state grocery tax from 1.5% to 0.125% if the state's budget obligations in several key areas decline over a six-month period. Republican Senator Jonathan Dismang of Beebe tells Talk Business they will take a close look at the details.
"Obviously, there's some executive recommendations that are out there that, you know, I don't believe the legislative body is going to agree with. We'll take a good look at the grocery tax and his proposal there and see if it's even feasible at this point. I'm not sure that it is. But again, I think we have a good starting point for the process today, and I'm sure the legislature will act in its full capacity to make its recommendations."
The budget proposal also allocates $140 million over 2 years in surplus spending to help close a Medicaid funding gap.
The Arkansas House has a new speaker going into its 2013 legislative session. Davy Carter, a Republican from Cabot, will fill that role. The vote comes after Representative Darren Williams, a Democrat from Little Rock, who had already been elected speaker designate, was not affirmed. After the recent election, Republicans are now the majority in the House. And after yesterday's vote, Carter spoke of bipartisanship as he laid out the main issues for the upcoming session.
"We have two issues. I mean, you know, and as I stand here today, everything else is probably, you know, just inherently going to be secondary. We're going to have, you know, the Medicaid issue, and we're going to have tax reform. And those are going to, at some point, you know, collide. And that will likely be the heart of the session."
Carter beat out Representative Terry Rice, a Republican from Waldron, for the speaker's position. Carter is seen by many observers as a more moderate Republican.
The time to begin turning shovels is drawing closer for a much-anticipated road project in Fayetteville. Chris Brown, Fayetteville city engineer, says only a few administrative hurdles remain before crews can begin construction of the 71B flyover, which will connect northbound College Avenue traffic to the Fulbright Expressway and to Mall Avenue and Shiloh Drive.
"It's really just a matter of going through that process and of approvals through the city council. We also have to get approval through the state highway department because we do have federal funding included on the project, and so they're responsible for making sure that federal funding is properly spent. So they're looking at it as well. But yeah, then it's really a matter of getting contracts signed and issuing the work order. So we expect that sometime in January we should be able to issue that work order and the contractor can go to work."
Although exact times and dates that lanes will be closed won't be known until the contractor finalizes its construction schedule, Brown says individual lanes are likely to be closed for several months at a time, and construction will close College Avenue entirely for short intervals when the steel beams for the bridge are being placed over the roadway. From the beginning, the $16.3 million project has been intended to alleviate traffic problems at the intersection of College Avenue and Joyce Boulevard.
"Right now, we have a lot of folks who are coming down College Avenue who want to make a left turn onto Joyce, go into the major shopping area, the mall area. Also, at the same time, those left turners, some of them, about 25% of those left turners, are actually making a U-turn to get onto the Fulbright Expressway. Then we have the traffic coming off of the Fulbright Expressway onto College Avenue. Many of them want to go right on Joyce. And so you have your classic weaving situation where you have cars on one side that want to go to the left and the cars on the other side want to go to the right. And it's very congested and there are lots of accidents right at that intersection.
The project is expected to be completed sometime in the middle of 2014.
The USDA on Tuesday announced $4.5 million in grants will go to 68 projects in 37 states and the District of Columbia to connect school cafeterias with local agricultural producers. The Fayetteville School District received a slice of that money. The school district was awarded more than $99,000 for its farm-to-school program. Fayetteville Public Schools Sustainability Coordinator Dana Smith says the money will be spent in the three areas of training, equipment, and education.
So training includes culinary training for our food service staff to better be able to prepare and use local products, as well as some training for our local farmers and producers. And the equipment includes kitchen equipment to, again, better handle whole local produce. And then education is primarily education for students, because we found that if they know where their food comes from and they get excited about it, they're more likely to try new foods and to eat more of these, especially fresh vegetables.
The program at Fayetteville Public Schools, which mirrors other programs across the country, has been around in some form since 2005.
Initially, it was cafeteria staff going down to the farmers market and buying stuff directly from farmers at the market, just occasionally when they could. All the way up until this past summer, we did a lot of local purchasing for our summer lunch program held at Owl Creek School. And that was really our first attempt at creating a model program and working with more producers and integrating more local food on the menu.
Smith says the school district is working to make its farm-to-school program sustainable even after the federal money is spent. She says the program wouldn't be successful without the help of community partners, including Feed Fayetteville, the University of Arkansas Horticulture Department, and the Fayetteville Farmers Market.
Fort Smith officials are working on the city's 2013 budget. One topic that has been subject to discussion during the budget hearings is city sidewalk improvements. City Communications Director Tracy Winchell says with turnback money coming to the city from the newly approved half-cent state highway tax, the city is looking at improving other modes of surface transportation besides just highways, adding that several residents have requested sidewalk improvements.
In some neighborhoods, we need new sidewalks everywhere. It hasn't been something until recently that we've asked builders to participate in when they build residential or commercial areas. We add sidewalks as we make street and drainage improvements and do overlays a lot of times, but this summer we've had a crew working downtown to repair some just really messed up sidewalks. And of course, downtown is a pedestrian area, but next, I think what we'll probably wind up concentrating on are neighborhood schools and things like that.
Winchell says considering the city's annual budget for sidewalks has been around $200,000 for at least a decade, any additional revenue for sidewalks is more than the city currently has for the project.
Clear tonight, lows will be in the lower to mid-30s. Tomorrow, clear, then partly cloudy with a high in the low to mid-60s. And tomorrow night, clear in the evening, then partly cloudy, lows in the mid to upper 30s. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of the City Wire, which covers politics, business, culture, and more for the KUAF listening area. This has been an extraordinarily busy November so far, Michael.
Yes, it has, and I'm hoping that this Friday, I'm hoping the news world just shuts down. I mean, other than the folks saying they're not going to produce any more Twinkies,
that's
all the news we make today.
Well, let's start with A bit of a change in financial news. Home prices in the Fort Smith region are apparently going up.
Yes, it's a good sign. I mean, the number of homes sold is still down year to date, but the value is holding. And if you're looking for a good sign, you want to see those values hold, and that's what we're seeing. The in October homes sold in Sebastian County. There were 91 homes sold, value of just short of $14 million, and that compares to 88 homes sold last year for $11 million. So that is a good sign. We're still seeing, you know, we're still seeing realtors say that this job insecurity mixed with tighter lending criteria is still making it difficult. You know, people just either they can't get the loan or they're just going to hold on to this house or they're going to continue to rent until they know what the economy, especially the local economy, is going to do. But as you noted, it's nice to see an increase in stability in home prices in the Fort Smith area.
Just not that flexibility for many people yet.
No, I mean, it's just still a lot of uncertainty. It's just the darnest thing I've ever seen, Kyle, just uncertainty lasting this long. But, you know, when you have Whirlpool that has left and people are uncertain what Rheem's going to do, what Train will do, it's people are just a little jumpy.
Some mixed news. Walmart released earnings news yesterday before the markets opened. Profits, but just narrowly missed what they thought they would have.
Right. Especially on the revenue side, their profit side is up. The revenue side is a little bit down, and they did reaffirm their full year guidance, and so they're saying they're still going to pull it out in the fourth quarter. But we're still seeing a lot of pressure. Walmart's getting a lot of pressure from online, from Amazon. You know, Target's no longer. Target's always going to be a competitor, but it's not the one that can hurt them the most. And then yesterday we learned also that Walmart, essentially the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, is requiring Walmart to be a little more transparent with shareholders about other countries in which there may be some concerns with violations of the Foreign Corruption Practices Act. You know, we've had the allegations in Mexico about bribery, bribing officials to get stores open sooner. Well, now they're apparently looking at similar allegations in China, India, and Brazil. So, you know, hang on. Here we go again.
Those are three big markets, Brazil, China, and India.
Yeah, they're huge. I mean, and that's the core. If you've kept up with Walmart at all, you know, those, are, especially China, are the core of their international sales, and their international sales has been their champion the past several years in terms of keeping them, allowing them to hit their income targets. And so, you know, they're in South Africa. That's another big market. But those three, that's the big three for them.
One of the strongest signs of the regional economy has been the hospitality sector, and it continues to show very strong numbers.
Yes, it's in Northwest Arkansas. You know, we shouldn't be amazed that they're still having high numbers, but it's the level. You know, it's the double digit. It's the 17% increases overall among the five cities in Northwest Arkansas in terms of hospitality tax collections. Again, a lot of that's driven by, you know, the business travelers from Walmart, but we're also seeing the increase in the visitors to Crystal Bridges. You know, the Crystal Bridges officials are reporting that their target was 250,000 visitors in the first year. Well, whoops, they kind of broke that and went over to 600,000. So, that, I mean, not whoops, that's good news.
Right.
So that's a clear example of where we're getting a lot of these higher hospitality tax collections. And down in Fort Smith and Van Buren, both those cities are up over 6% year-to-date, and that's a healthy increase. And so both of those markets are tracking along the national tourism sector, which is even nationwide, the business and tourism travel has been one of the few bright spots.
And this, there is the idea that this is a rising tide lifting all boats, that you have Crystal Bridges, you have the business travelers. When the Marshalls Museum is built, that if it's good for perhaps Bentonville or Fayetteville or Fort Smith, it's good for everybody?
Well, you know, one would hope. I mean, the Marshalls Museum, it will be a key to bringing people here. You know, I hear a lot of folks who are in the Fort Smith area talk about driving up to Bentonville to see the museum, or obviously they go to the games. So the Northwest Arkansas area is getting a lot of travel from the Fort Smith area, but it doesn't happen the other way around. So if you get the Marshalls Museum, you know, there'll be some of that, not at the same level. But, and the idea also, tourism officials have said, you know, like Richard Davies, the head of the Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism, you have the Clinton Library in Little Rock, Crystal Bridges in Northwest Arkansas, National Marshals Museum in Fort Smith. You know, they see that kind of as a golden tourism triangle. They can get people bussed in and group tours and another great tool to sell Arkansas.
And finally, the Arkansas legislature won't actually officially convene the next general session until January. Yesterday at the state capitol, there was some intrigue as a new state house speaker was elected.
Well, right. You know, Roby Brock with Talk Business, who I know you have on your show there frequently, we've talked about how this is going to be the most interesting legislative session. You know, you have Republicans now in charge of the House and the Senate. And we've talked about how this is going to be different. We've right out of the gate, you know, it went different beyond what we even thought it would be. And you have Davy Carter, Republican, third-term member of the House from Cabot, just pulled up off an upset over Terry Rice out of Waldron. You know, Terry has been the presumptive nominee for over a year. And, you know, here comes Davy Carter last 3 days, just pulls a coup and develops a coalition using young House members, young Republican House members, and some of the more conservative Democrats, and just upset Rice. So, as you said, we're not even into the 2013 General Assembly, and this thing's already thrown us a big twist.
Well, and I'm going to talk to Roby later in the program and ask him about what does this mean for inside that slim majority of Republicans as the session starts.
Well, it's going to be... Roby and I talked the other day, and I likened it to it's going to be almost parliamentarian in nature. You know, it's just going to be a jumping from one coalition to the next, depending on what the issue is. So I think
I suppose
the one word we may see frequently in our coverage of the 2013 General Assembly is coalitions.
You know, I suppose an optimist could look at that and say, well, that's good. Perhaps party lines will not create the sort of deadlock we see in Washington, D.C. I suppose a pessimist would say it could create even more deadlock.
Yeah, well, and that is interesting. The winner, here's the big winner in all of this. No one should be surprised. Governor Beebe is the big winner in all of this. And I continue to find it amazing. I've been watching him for a long time, and I love it when people say, well, we finally, you know, we're going to take on Governor Beebe. And I just think, well, good luck with that. Hope that works out for you.
Don't you think in the state that has the most restrictive legislative term limits, a governor who is in his seventh and eighth year is always going to have the advantage over what is always going to be a somewhat inexperienced legislative body?
Yes, but with Beebe, you not only have his term as governor,
right?
But he was the puppet master, whatever you want to call it. And I don't mean that in a negative term, but he and Senator Harriman, who's from Van Buren, who's now Beebe's chief of staff, they were the brains behind the legislature for many years before term limits. So they know how it works. They know how the legislative side works probably better than any of the legislators down there. I mean, I dare say they've forgotten more about what goes on down there than most of those folks know.
Well, it will be an interesting session to watch when they get together in January.
Just strap in.
Well, I hope the rest of your Friday is as quiet as you'd like.
I hope so, and I hope yours is also.
Thank you. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com, and happy weekend, Michael.
All right. Thanks, Kyle.
Hello, this is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night. On the Friday edition of the show, I will feature the music of Sean Jones, the great trumpeter who will be performing at the Walton Arts Center on December the 1st. We'll also hear from Bobo Stenson, Cal Jader, Freddie Hubbard, and much more. That's Friday night at 10 p.m.
The first ever endowed chair in the Eleanor Mann School of Nursing at the University of Arkansas was dedicated yesterday on campus. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas attended the ceremony and has this report.
About 40 or so people gathered yesterday in the newly constructed Epley Building for Health Professions on the University of Arkansas campus. People including Tom Smith, Dean of the College of Education and Health Professions, along with several administrators with the college. The purpose? To dedicate the first ever endowed chair in the Eleanor Mann School of Nursing. When the Epley Building was dedicated back in March, it was a big deal. Couple that with this chair. It proves the commitment of the university to the ever-growing and ever-important field of nursing. This endowment allowed for the appointment of Dr. Peggy Bell, the new director of the School of Nursing. She herself a registered nurse since 1973. Ever a jokester, Chancellor Dave Gerhard welcomed her in his speech to the crowd.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. I want to thank all of you for coming today on this very important announcement. I also want to congratulate Peggy. We're so glad to have you here at the university. I know you'll be introduced a little bit later, but I want to tell you how delighted we are that you are a part of the institution in this very significant role. And we knew you were coming, so we built this whole building just for you. But congratulations to you. We're so pleased that you're at the University of Arkansas.
Gerhart went on to thank Boyce Billingsley and her late husband, George, the couple responsible for this endowment. The two have been longtime donors to the university, making other endowed gifts, scholarships, donations to the music department, the libraries, athletics, along with the Alumni Association. Giving because of a desire to advance the idea of Arkansas truly being a land of opportunity. Unfortunately, Mrs. Billingsley was ill yesterday and therefore unable to attend this reception.
And Boyce, my script here says that I'm now to call on you to come up and make remarks. Since you're not here, I'll just do it for you. And knowing you, it would be very brief, but very heartfelt. And so I will simply say thank you on your behalf. But the real thank you, Boyce, goes to you. We're grateful to you. Thank you.
Provost Sharon Gaber welcomed the recipient of the George M. and Boyce W. Billingsley Endowed Chair in Nursing and the new director of the Eleanor Mann School of Nursing, Dr. Peggy Bell. Dr. Bell has served in nursing education since 1979 and comes to Arkansas from Barry University in Florida, where she was dean of their School of Nursing. Dr. Bell's acceptance speech included the need for accredited health care in this rural state, stating that in Arkansas, there are 32,000 registered nurses, with just over 11,000 of them holding a bachelor's degree. I spoke with Bell prior to the event, who says this money will allow the school to continue its growth, as it has for the past 43 years.
I think we were sort of disadvantaged at the beginning. We started out as an associate degree program, and we had to really develop into a baccalaureate. Now we have a master's degree, and in fall we're getting a doctorate degree. So it really says we're on the same stature as the other schools in the university.
She hopes that it will help the school meet the needs of the nursing workforce in Arkansas. And
for me personally, it's very prestigious to have an endowed chair in nursing, and it means that I join a number of colleagues and scholars across the country with this designation.
After the ceremony, Chancellor Gerhard attested to the significance of this chair to the university.
I think it recognizes the incredible importance of nursing to the state of Arkansas and, for that matter, to our whole country. There's a tremendous shortage of nurses in this nation. It's an acute problem that we have to do everything we can to try to address. And I think the University of Arkansas is working very hard to double the number of nurses that we're putting out into the workforce. And this chair enables us to bring in top people to the university, to bring in Peggy, who is our new director, one of the best in the nation, probably would not have been able to attract her had we not had this chair. So it really is helping us to bring in top educators that will indeed educate the next generation of our nurses. So I can't stress enough how important it is to everything we're doing here at the university, particularly in health education.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
This is Ozarks at Large. Hundreds of thousands of Syrians have fled their country, seeking refuge from the constant violence that has devastated Syria. It's estimated by international relief agencies about half of those displaced, perhaps even more, are children. Tomorrow, an effort to help raise money and awareness for those displaced who have managed to make it out of Syria will take place around the world in many different cities, including Fayetteville. Arkansas's stand for the children of Syria will be at the Fayetteville Town Center beginning at 2 tomorrow afternoon. Local partners include St. Joseph's Catholic Church, St. Paul's Episcopal Church, the Fayetteville Quakers, and Golden Key International Honor Society. Moshe Koff is one of the organizers of tomorrow's event.
They are going to be collecting money for UNICEF, also Amnesty International, International Red Cross. There are, I kind of lost count, I think there's about 21 cities in the U.S., participating this time, and at least 7 or 8 locations in other countries, Italy, the United Kingdom, Sweden. And a really kind of interesting thing is that people in the camps themselves are going out, not of course going out to donate to UNICEF, right, but just as a sense of empowerment and involvement. They want to go out and hold the logos up and show that they are involved and engaged.
When you say camps, you're talking about people who have fled Syria and are in camps.
Syrian refugee camps in Turkey.
Mm-hmm. One of the primary points of interest is that this is apolitical.
This is humanitarian only. It doesn't matter which side you're on. It doesn't matter what your typical politics are, if they are left and right. And the really cool thing about Fayetteville is people come together. In our town, unlike many other areas where those ends of the spectrum form separate communities, people come together, and they have for this. It's so heartening. We have the Omni Peace Center. We have St. Joseph's Church. We have the Quakers. We have St. Paul's. We have Omni students, Omni UA students chapter.
The private sector.
And the Golden Key Honor right. Society from the UA, our Segas. Petra Cafe, Fiddlehead Fern, Nature's Water.
And to raise money, because depending on the estimates you read, 750,000 people or more have been displaced because of the violence.
348,000. And I was in Turkey when there were about 9,000 to 12,000 refugees, summer 2011. And they were overwhelmed. They had shortages of medicines for diabetics and other people. We were told that they needed underwear and hygiene products, and we were trying to gather people to shop for them and take them. It was very difficult. There was a lot of red tape. You couldn't go near the camps. And that was overwhelming for the existing Turkish agencies at that time. That was 12,000 tops. Mm. And now in Turkey, about 100,000+, and the same amount in Lebanon, and another same amount in Jordan, about 40,000 in Iraq. And these are just the registered refugees.
And when you consider that there could be as many as, 500,000 people displaced from their homes that are still inside the borders?
2.5 million displaced internally.
So.
And it's very difficult for UNICEF to reach them internally. UNICEF will not cross a border and go inside a country unless that country's government invites them. So, yes, there are camps, actually encampments of displaced people on the Syria side inside along the Turkey border that it's very difficult for official agencies to reach. So we can only give to where we
right.
can reach through these agencies. And that will then free up local resources, hopefully, to deal with the others. It is just overwhelming. It is catastrophic. If you think about Hurricane Katrina, this is at least 5 man-made, but the same or worse level of destructions. Entire sections of cities flattened, some smaller cities almost entirely flattened. Just yesterday, I was working for several days on a project highlighting prisoners of conscience, nonviolent individuals who have been held over a year now, arrested during the uptime of the uprising, no arrest warrants or anything like that, illegally detained. So it's called the 1 year and counting. And she said, I have to shut my computer they're going to start bombing. The Syrian army is about to start bombing, and the electricity is going to go off, and I need to save power. And I was frantic until she got on. She has little girls that were interrupting the work, so I was aware of them. And she said, and Dareya is a town of about 200,000. And the following day, today actually, when I talked to her, she said, Dareya is empty. Anyone left there is sitting ducks, so they're fleeing. And I said, where are they fleeing to? Because I know surrounding areas around them are also being bombed by tanks and, you know, attacked and assaulted by aerial bombardment by the army. And she said, well, there are pockets. And so families in areas that are farther away from the actual bombardment are taking in 2, 3, 4 families at a time. And then also we actually had a Fayetteville resident whose family in Sueda, which is a relatively, you know, safer area in terms of it's not actually being shelled and bombed. Her father and mother took in families from Homs, one of the displaced cities. Rasha El Endari, if anyone around here knows her, she's a radio person too. And then her father got arrested for that.
For taking in?
For taking in. They became aware that there were displaced families living with them, and he was arrested and underwent an incredible, horrendous ordeal in 3 weeks in prison, and is still recovering from it.
This is called the Arkansas Stand for the Children of Syria, and one reason the children, because they make up, children make up a significant percentage of the people who have been displaced.
They are so, so huge a part of the traumatized and the victimized because the shelling is so, you know, on residential areas.
What will happen Saturday afternoon from 2 until 3 at the town center?
Well, it could be the most important hour of your day if you come. We will raise awareness about the situation in Syria, and the focus will be entirely humanitarian rather than political, again, uniting all sides around the children. We will learn about the children. There will be a display that many people are helping to contribute to. One of the Syrians from Little Rock will say something, and Hanan Makhoul, she happens to be a Syrian of Christian background, and I hope people will be interested in what she has to say. And we will all chant, stop the killing in the land for the children, hand in hand. There will be a donation table. Susan Shore will perform. Talina Madonna will perform. Our Segas will have wonderful hot beverages. Petra will sell food.
You know, there can be a tendency for people, especially if they're not connected by family or geography or heritage, to see something as horrific as what happened in Syria and say, well, there's nothing I can do. You know, I have empathy, but there's – I get the feeling an event like this can be empowering for people as well to think, wait, there is something that I can do to contribute to make a difference.
Yes. And, you know, even just being there, regardless of your ability to donate to UNICEF, heartens the people. Because they're like, where is the world while this is happening to us? We get coverage of your disasters. We are in a, you know, tsunami of disaster here. Does anybody care? And they're so deep down in the well of that suffering that it's important to reach just to, we're going to have everybody, I hope that everyone who's there will tape little videos on their phones, and we'll collect them all on the Facebook page, and we'll do a compilation. We'll do several compilations, and we'll send them to places and sites where they will see them inside.
So someone could be in a camp in Turkey or Lebanon and actually see that
or a displaced person inside.
Uh-huh. Right.
And they are so heartened when they see, you know, foreigners, people who are foreign to them from across the world, sending these messages of love and hope and comfort to them.
This is a busy time of year. There may be people out of town not unable to attend from 2 until 3 at the town center. Does this obviously this specific event is for that hour. Does this effort extend beyond that hour on Saturday?
You can help by going to UNICEF's special link for the Syrian children, and just click on their donation button anytime. There are many ways that you can help. There's also the Fellowship of Reconciliation, a peace and justice organization in the U.S. since 1915, a very respected organization, where you can go and with a simple click or two, write a letter on behalf of a nonviolent individual who's been detained and being tortured only for freedom of expression and opinion. Fellowship of Reconciliation.
And also, if you want to know more about Saturday's event, Facebook, there are any number of places.
Search for our event on Facebook. It's called Arkansas, with an apostrophe at the end, Stand for the Children of Syria.
Moshe, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Kyle.
Moshe Koff is an organizer of Arkansas' Stand for the Children of Syria that takes place tomorrow beginning at 2 at the Fayetteville Town Center.
KUAF is supported by listener contributions and by Malco Theaters, offering avoidance of sold-out movies and waiting in line with online ticket sales. Advance tickets to neighborhood Malco Theaters available online at malco.com. KUAF is also supported by Ben Owens Shelter Insurance Agency, providing auto, home, and life insurance. 582-4990 for more information.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, meet my new blues friends, Donna Harula and Tony Nardiello. They stopped in on the way back to Chicago and played some Delta Slide blues. That's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
It is Friday, November 16th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown, features editor for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Yes, it is the Friday before Thanksgiving. And yes, Thanksgiving is early this year.
Earliest it can be.
But the holiday season starts in earnest Saturday.
Oh, Lord.
Lighting.
The lights go on in Fayetteville and Bentonville.
Oh, that's right.
The Fayetteville Unites with Holiday Lights Parade starts at 6 o'clock Saturday at the library, goes down Mountain Street, around the square, then takes Center Street to school and back to the library. And that's also when they start camel rides and carriage rides and pony rides and hot chocolate.
And the lights of the Ozarks will go on then and remain up through New Year's.
Right. And the lighting of the Bentonville Square takes place between 6 and 6:15 on Saturday. The skating rink at Lawrence Plaza opens at noon, and there's free skating from 12:30 to 4:30. And then the Miss Winter Wonderland pageant at 1 o'clock, live music at 4, and the Christmas tree, the new Happy Christmas tree, will be lighted at 6:45.
And the Bentonville Christmas Parade is now a week after this weekend.
Right.
One of the largest, if not the largest, daytime parades in the state of Arkansas.
I did not know that.
They expect 10,000 people there or more.
Seriously?
Yeah.
And you'll appreciate the final event of the evening in Bentonville. It's a showing of It's a Wonderful Life at 7:45 at Lawrence Plaza. Also this weekend, holiday lights go on the Harrison downtown area.
Square, yes.
The annual Trail of Holiday Lights starts in Ozark.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lighting ceremony at 6:30 Tuesday at Stubblefield Center at the University of Arkansas in Fort Smith.
There's a ton of stuff.
And they will have hot cocoa and apple cider. And then there's all this other stuff this weekend that we've got to get to real quick.
Okay. So many things.
Beauty and the Beast.
Arts Live.
Arts Live Theater. 7 o'clock today, 2 and 7 Saturday, and 2 on Sunday. And it's at the UA Global Campus, i.e. Continuing Ed Auditorium.
Right, on the corner of the square.
Right, where it always has been. It just has a different name. Tickets are $8 to $12. Blithe Spirit wraps up this weekend at University Theater. It's a classic comedy about the battle between two wives, one living and one dead.
Noel Coward, say no more.
Really, really funny play. 8 o'clock today and Saturday, 2 o'clock Sunday. Tickets are $7 to $16. Fort Smith Little Theater wraps up Little Women at 8 o'clock today and tomorrow. Tickets are $10. It's the Fall Antique Show at the end of the Ozarks Convention Center in Eureka Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Much happiness. 50 dealers from 14 states worth of happiness. 10 to 6 on Saturday and 10 to 4 on Sunday, and it's $5 to get in. And tomorrow night, Outside the Lines performs.
At ACO.
At 7:30. Stan Diabon, Emily Cates, and Ed Nicholson.
Very eclectic.
Very funny.
Very funny. Very talented. Mm-hmm. Great musicians.
Gypsy jazz.
Yeah.
Austin folk.
It'll be a good time.
Right.
And tickets are $9 to $16. You can call for reservations at 751-5441.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
150 years ago, Union officials in Helena were concerned about Confederate fortifications under construction at Arkansas Post. General Alvin Hovey set out on November 16, 1862, with 6,000 infantry, 2,000 cavalry, and a gunboat to attack the rebel base. The horsemen soon ran into trouble and fled at East Arkansas, with one Yankee trooper writing that they rode single file, floundering through the swamps, many horses miring down. A heavy rain came on and continued without intermission. The infantry was stopped by low water on the White River, and the expedition returned to Helena on November 21. Hovey reported, "I deeply regret that we could not have been permitted to consummate our plans, as I feel confident that we should have captured the post." To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Crist.
As we mentioned earlier in the program, a new Speaker of the House for the Arkansas General Assembly was selected yesterday. Davy Carter from Cabot is a member of the new majority Republicans in the House, and he was elected over the man that was thought to be the favored candidate, Republican Terry Rice of Waldron. Carter ascends to the post with the support of some Republicans and some Democrats. Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net was at the state capitol yesterday.
I think there's a couple of factors that were at work here. Number one, the margins were so small. I think that Republican expectations were that they would get 60 or maybe even more seats in the House, and there was a plan in place that was going to trigger a series of leadership decisions based on that. And it was going to be pretty aggressive in terms of changing staff and rules. And with a 51-vote margin, which is just one vote over what they needed for a majority, there was some hesitancy from some of the moderate Republicans that were not in the Rice leadership team to say, that's too far too fast, and we need to be a little bit more cautious and moderate in our approach. And really, with just one Republican peeling off, they don't have a majority anymore. So it kind of presented this dilemma of, you know, I don't like the direction this thing's going. And Carter, I think, quickly and early on kind of emerged as the consensus favorite among this group of upstarts that were concerned about that direction. And I think some of the leadership decisions that were not announced publicly but were working their way privately into the Rice leadership team, I think there were some concerns from some Republicans that have been in some positions of power as the minority that they didn't agree with those decisions. This is an opportunity for them to move into those positions if they can, you know, structure this coup, for lack of a better word. If you saw last Friday, this is way inside baseball, the Republicans really got schooled on a couple of major committee assignments, particularly the Joint Budget Committee, where Democrats outnumber them 14 to 10. For a party that ran this last election cycle on the premise of lower government and lower taxes, less government and lower taxes, to not control the budget committee in the House is a pretty serious setback. So I think all of those events kind of swirled together and presented themselves as, we need to have stronger leadership here, and another person needs to lead us, and Davy Carter has emerged as that candidate.
Well, this will make for interesting observation as the legislature convenes in January. I mean, see if this sort of thing, you know, creates problems within that very slim majority.
I think that there will be some wounds to have to heal, and I think it could be a very divisive session among the Republicans, not necessarily between Republicans and Democrats as we had previously expected. I still think there'll be some partisan issues in that respect, but I think the Republicans are going to have a tough time. This has been a very hurtful challenge, and I think they'll put on game face for a while, but this is the kind of politics that's just not going to heal itself quickly, and you know, there's been some trust issues, and this is going to be very difficult for them. Now, I will say, for Governor Mike Beebe, we all thought, how is he going to work with a Republican-controlled House and Senate? He and Davy Carter have a very fine working relationship. I don't think Davy Carter will, you know, be puppeted by Mike Beebe, but they just have an immense amount of respect for each other, and I think that they will work well together on issues where they have common ground. And Senator Michael Lamoureux, who was installed as the Senate president, because the Republicans took control there. He and Governor Beebe have a good relationship, too. So this may work out to be a very smooth session on some big picture items, Medicaid expansion being the one exception. But I think there'll be some good congeniality and some real opportunities for Republicans and a Democratic governor to work together because of these leadership changes.
Roby Brock is the editor and publisher of TalkBusiness.net. He covered yesterday's election of a new Speaker of the Arkansas House of Representatives at the state capitol yesterday. You can read more at TalkBusiness.net.
Herman Wouk has been writing best-selling novels for more than half a century, and at the age of 97, he still has work to do.
I'm still in it. And there's a surprise around the corner tomorrow, so let me alone.
Herman Wouk in his new novel, The Lawgiver, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition Saturday with Scott Simon, tomorrow morning from 7 until 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM. It's time to give some stuff away.
Excellent.
Writer's Almanac coming up, but this is a pretty good package that we're about to...
if we do say so ourselves.
Yes. Here's the deal. You'll get a brand new 2013 Tim Ernst calendar.
Which I just looked at, and it's very pretty, which, as always.
Right. So you've got one of those. Four tickets to Malco Movie Theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And two tickets to opening night of Billy Elliot at Walton Arts Center.
I like it.
So four movie tickets, two tickets to opening night of Billy Elliot, and the Tim Ernst calendar. We'll mail you the calendar. Mm-hmm. We'll mail you the movie tickets. The Billy Elliot tickets will be at Will Call at Walton Arts Center.
That's like the best thing in the world because I would lose things.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And opening night, by the way, is Tuesday, December 4th.
Okay.
Okay. So here comes a question. And what we'll do is we'll have you email to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Yes.
All correct answers will be put into the ceramic cow and we will draw one.
Yes.
All right. There are 50 state capitals.
There are.
Two of them border another state. The capital itself shares a border with another state, Carson City, Nevada, and Trenton, New Jersey.
Yes.
One state capital borders another country.
Oh.
And we're talking strictly state capitals, not San Juan, Puerto Rico. I'm not trying to get clever here. One of the 50 state capitals borders another country.
Excellent. All right. So if you know the answer, you email us the correct answer at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com, and we will draw a winner on Monday. So you have the whole weekend.
The whole weekend.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 16th of November, 2012. It's the birthday of W.C. Handy, born Florence, Alabama, 1873, the son and grandson of Methodist ministers who did not approve of his going into the music business. They expected him to become a minister. He became a piano player, went on the road with bands, wound up in Memphis, and he became the first person to write down the music that would become known as the blues. His first song, Memphis Blues, later his most famous song, St. Louis Blues. He was the first person to write sheet music for it and to make it accessible for mass consumption. It's the birthday of the novelist Andrea Barrett, born Boston, 1954, author of fiction about botanists, oceanographers, geologists. Her novel, The Voyage of the Narwhal, came out in 1998. It's the birthday of the novelist Chinua Achebe, born in Ogidi, Nigeria, in 1930. His great-uncle was the man who first received European missionaries into his village. His father was an early convert to Christianity. Achebe, the boy, was baptized as a Christian, spent his childhood reading the Bible every day, went to a school run by Europeans, read Charles Dickens and Jonathan Swift and Joseph Conrad. His novel, Things Fall Apart, came out in 1958, one of the first novels ever written about European colonization from the point of view of the colonized. And it's the birthday of the novelist José Saramago, born in a little village northeast of Lisbon in 1922. Parents couldn't afford an academic school, so he went to a technical school, became an auto mechanic. His first novel, Land of Sin, came out when he was 24 years old. Then he stopped writing fiction for the next 30 years, until, in his mid-50s, unemployed, blacklisted by the government for his political activities, he went back to writing fiction, his novel Raised from the Ground, about three generations of a peasant family, and his novel Blindness in 1997. A year later, 1998, José Saramago won the Nobel Prize for Literature. Here's a poem for today by George Bilgear at the Vietnam Memorial. The last time I saw the name Paul Castle, it was printed in gold on the wall above the showers in the boys' locker room next to the school record for the mile. I don't recall his time, but the year was 1968, and I can look across the infield of memory to see him on the track, legs flashing, body bending slightly beyond the pack of runners at his back. He couldn't spare a word for me, 2 years younger, junior varsity, and hardly worth the waste of breath. He owned the hallways, a cool blonde at his side, and aimed his interests further down the line than we could guess. Now, reading the name again, I see us standing in the showers, naked kids beneath his larger, comprehensive force, the ones who trail obscurely in the wake of the swift, like my shadow on this gleaming wall. At the Vietnam Memorial, a poem by George Bilgear, used here by permission of the poet on the Writer's Almanac, supported by PBS, presenting The Dust Bowl, a new film from director Ken Burns, starts Sunday at 8, 7 Central on PBS. And by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hey, listener, supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Fallsville.
Fallsville?
Yep.
In Newton County?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's south of Red Star.
Yes, it's beautiful there. I bet it's beautiful there right now.
Oh, probably.
Both you and I went to the Theater Squared gala last night.
We did. I had a really good time.
I did too. Lawrence Luckinbill, Larry Luckinbill, I guess.
Fort Smith native.
Gave a speech about what theater, how it, his words, saved his life, and gave part of a performance from his one-man show based on the lives and words, life and words of Lyndon Baines Johnson. It was terrific.
It was a good night.
It was. And a sold out.
Yeah.
Mermaids was packed.
It was packed.
And don't forget that on Tuesday the 27th,
yes,
the next Theater Squared sneak preview.
Forum.
Right.
Thing.
At Fayetteville Public Library.
Yes, hosted by you.
Right, and that's absolutely free. And yep, you get a sneak preview from the play.
Mm-hmm.
You've been spending the last few minutes trying to come up with the state capital.
I'm sad that I don't know this immediately. I should know it. I'm going to keep thinking on it. And everybody else can keep thinking on it too,
right,
through the weekend.
Right. It's the only state capital to border another country. In all correct answers at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com, go into the Ceramic Cow for that package. It includes the two Billy Elliot tickets, the four movie tickets, and the calendar, the Tim Ernst 2013 calendar. We've got some more calendars we'll be giving away.
Oh, absolutely. We've got a whole box here.
Yes. So we'll be giving those away through the rest of November and into December.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Big weekend?
I have some birthday party plans, so yes.
I thought you had
not
birthday?
Not my birthday. Okay. A friend of mine. You know me and my friends. We do all of the birthdays.
You do big birthdays. Right.
What about you?
I will be in Kansas City tomorrow.
For?
Bruce Springsteen.
You're very excited.
I'm very excited.
I'm excited for you.
Well, thank you. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait.
I know.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Christina Thomas will be with me on Sunday morning for Weekend Ozarks.
Yes.
You're back on Monday.
I'm back on Monday. Have a good weekend.